This is KBOO Radio 90.7 FM, Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Richard Smith, a China expert. We've been talking about the rise of China, the bureaucratic police state being, unlike many others in history, extremely efficient, and the various reasons that the Chinese state was able to force this industrialization. Richard, what's the future, though? The New York Times and many others seem to think that China may well fall into decline. What's your sense, and how do you see the future for China? Will it be able to sustain this challenge to the United States?
Okay, so the point is to understand what are the drivers of the Chinese ruling class. And this is the key thing. Although they introduced these special economic zones, and then they brought in capitalist wholesale in many areas of the economy and retail and some industries and so forth, Western capitalist investors I'm talking about, this bureaucracy is a state-based bureaucracy. They have from day one been concerned to develop their own economy. They are not interested in having Western capitalists come in and take over their economy. They've been there, done that, thank you, they don't want that again. So they have from the first day been concerned to have their own steel industry, their own auto industry, their own aviation industry, their own shipping industry, their own telecom, their own internet, everything. So what happened was the money they made out of the special economic zones in the 80s and 90s enabled them to renovate their own state industries called SOEs, state-owned enterprises. It enabled them to renovate, modernize those, and grow those and make them huge, what they call national champions. And so they built these companies up, like Sinopec, which is the Chinese oil industry, and State Grid, which is the electrical system, and so on and so forth, and China Bank and all the other banks. They created a huge state economy, which is very rich because it's largely based on monopolies in China. They all have monopolies. And there's no Citibank. They don't let Citibank compete with China Bank. And they don't let the telecom system, the internet, be taken over by Google or by any Western, you know. So they have their own system. The problem is that in the 1990s and 2000s, they got rich, so to speak, off of foreign exports. And then they built up these industries, and then their heads got fat. And so they started thinking, well, okay, so we want to be number one here, country here. We want to have domestic creation of our own technologies, and we want to do it ourselves and become the leading tech power in the world and the leading economic power in the world. Because these people are nationalists. These people are the direct descendants of all the Chinese nationalists going back to the 19th century who were looking for China to become wealthy and powerful and to restore China's greatness in what they perceive to be China's deserved place as the greatest power of the world. Zhongguo, China, the name China means center of the world. And they do today. Xi Jinping views China as the center of the world, and they want to dominate the world. This is their goal. The problem is that their bureaucratic collectivist economy has never been innovated. It has always depended on Western tech. Trump is completely right about this. They forced the transfer of technology to China, to Chinese companies, the partners. They forced them to hand over technology in return for market access in China. And they buy it where they can if they can't force them to do it. And they steal it. They hack in and they steal all their technology. So the problem is that there is virtually no technological innovation in the Chinese high-tech sector. Is hardly any at all, except in like facial recognition technology, the better to buy on their population. Though even there, they got a leg up on that from Western companies. The problem is that they're dependent. You know, like if you look in the Times article, there's a cross-section here of a Huawei telephone and all the key parts. Huawei is China's big tech industry, so-called private industry, but it's really a state-backed industry. And the Huawei telephone, the Chinese were able to develop technology up to a certain point by copying things, but now they want to aspire to be their own. But this Huawei telephone, all the key parts in this technology are from outside China. Chinese say 70% of the technology, high technology, that's in all of their industries comes from overseas. It's not domestic. And they want to reverse that. They want to make the Chinese the high-tech drivers. I don't see this happening. The Chinese are being successful in certain things, but not very much, because it's a completely corrupt society. One guy I quoted here in one of my chapters, he says, the truth is there is no honest business in China. They can't be, because it's a completely corrupt political party. It's corrupt from top to bottom, And the whole society has become, in effect, like that, because you have to buy off everything everywhere. Everything is stolen. So as soon as some guy invents something, his design gets ripped off. So you don't see capitalists investing big amounts of their own money in China's economy. What they want to do is make as much money as they can and then get out of the country, go to Canada or the U.S. You know, there are no Chinese Bill Gates, no Chinese Elon Musk. There's Alibaba, Jack Ma. He runs a company, Alibaba, which is just a clone of eBay. All these big companies are basically clones of Western companies. But they have a monopoly in China, so they're fabulously rich. How can they not make money? They make tons of money. But they are also slaves to the state. They absolutely do the bidding of the state, and they must, and they all understand that. But the problem is that because there's no protection of intellectual property in China, why would anybody invest millions of dollars to build an authentic, innovative product in China when some other Chinese guy is just going to rip it off in the next morning before you produce it? The economy is not only dependent on the West, but it's dependent on copying and stealing from the West, because there is no innovation in the state sector, which is increasingly most of the economy. So this is why Trump's trade war is such a huge problem for them. It's not so much the tariffs. The tariffs could be gone tomorrow. The problem is that his attack and the people, Leipziger and Navarro, these guys who are all in about China's tech theft, they are dead on about this problem, and they have raised this all over the world, and so they've given the Germans and even the craven British some spine here, and the Australians, to fight back against this tech theft and espionage and rip-off of intellectual property and so forth, so that this presents a huge problem. The headline of the Wall Street Journal yesterday was about the doors to Huawei are slamming shut around the world. Huawei is China's big technology company, which the Canadians just arrested the daughter of on a suspicion of bank fraud. And Huawei's been selling stuff to Iran in contravention of U.S. sanctions. The Canadians, they're so craven to the Chinese, they may kowtow and send her back and not let the U.S. extradite her. We'll see. All these countries, capitalists in Canada and even America, you know, capitalists in Britain and Australia, they're like comprador capitalists to the Chinese. They're so bought and paid for. The French, they let the Chinese government and its corrupt companies come in and buy them. You know, there's a picture in the paper the other day, a big stadium built in the middle of some country in Africa. Like, they did a stadium like a hole in the head, all the people living in hovels, you know. And they built this $6 million stadium as a gift to the president of the country, you know. So the Chinese can bring their plastic in and sell it by the train loads and destroy their local handicrafts industry. That's happening all over Africa. So I think it's going to be very tough for the Chinese, because it's easy to get up to mid-technology exports. It's much harder to get up to the very highest, the pinnacle of the high-tech, the chips, all that kind of high-tech stuff, the cloud servers and all that. It's very difficult for the Chinese state industries. They can't innovate on their own. You know, they all have to be politically correct. People like professors in colleges have to be politically correct to get promoted. That doesn't mean they may be any good, but, you know, I quoted with this American scholar of China. He was quoting this guy in the department. A third of the people in this department don't do anything. Another third of them do something, and the other third try to cover up for the people who are trying to do something. Another, somebody else said, like, half the people in this department should not even be here. You know, they're here on politics, not because of their merits. So China has lousy colleges, lousy universities. China aspires to be the leading tech power in the world, and not a single one of its universities is rated in the top 100 universities in the world.
This is Cable Radio 90.7 FM, Bill Resnick, for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Richard Smith, a China expert. Richard, that seems to me one part of the story, the sort of innovation in the tech industries. There's another part of thinking about development. The Chinese do have some enormous strengths in terms of developing industrial plants, in building roads, in building infrastructure. In fact, that's what they're doing all over Africa and Asia, the new Silk Road. They're exporting their own labor rather than wasting money on just building cities that no Chinese want to live in. That was one of their strategies that you've pointed out. Lots of just huge vacant apartments that nobody wants to live in. But instead of doing that, it seems to me what they're doing is selling infrastructure to many countries right in South Asia, in Africa, even in Latin America, and they're moving to develop those economies within sort of the Chinese orbit. And that's a real challenge for the neocolonial countries like the U.S., who are really predating in all of those countries, that is, basically stealing their resources and supporting their armies with bought and paid for leaders in these countries like Central America now and all over Africa, the neocolonial model. It seems to me we have sort of Chinese colonialism, which is much more developmental in terms of basics than the U.S.
Absolutely. I wrote an article called China's Drivers and Global Ecological Collapse. And in that article, I explained what the drivers of China's economy are. It talked about the problems of overproduction among the other drivers. So people could look that up if they're interested. The Chinese are phenomenal builders of infrastructure. I mean, if you go around China, you look at these cities they put up in no time at all, and the high-speed trains. I took the train in November from Beijing to Shanghai at 320 kilometers an hour, a three-hour trip from what had been previously on a train, like a 6 or 7 hour trip. They built the Great Wall. The Chinese are very good builders. That said, they have a system that forces them to overproduce everything, apartments, bridges, high-speed trains. They build great high-speed trains, but the problem is they build them all over the country, and they don't necessarily need them all over the country. And so you have lots of train stations that are sitting there empty. So there's massive overproduction because this is not a capitalist state. This is a bureaucratic state. They have a need to keep those workers working because they don't want to have idle workers standing around unemployed, because that spells social problems for them. So the Chinese have been very everybody working, even if they're producing stuff that no one can use, like producing steel they can't sell, aluminum they can't sell, everything, bicycles, apartment blocks, shopping malls, empty, needless, pointless highways to nowhere and so forth. They produce this all over China, and the Silk Road is basically an expansion of that overseas. So they're building infrastructure all over Southeast Asia and Africa, some of Latin America and East Europe and so forth like that. And they send their workers overseas too, because they don't want to hire the local workers who don't speak Chinese, and they mostly want to get their unemployed workers back home, because they've already built China to the hilt. So they want to get these people's jobs overseas, and so they take them overseas. So, you know, they come to Africa, which has lots of people who need work, but no, they don't employ them. They bring the Chinese when they can. And so they built all these ports. They have in mind to put what they call a string of pearls of ports along the Indian Ocean so they can dominate the trade there. And they're building these stupid trains across Asia to Europe. And I say stupid because there's a very good article on Bloomberg which show how incredibly inefficient it is to try to ship masses of containers by train across Asia compared with shipping them in a boat. It's 10 times cheaper to ship them in a boat. But, you know, they had this mythology of reproducing the Silk Road, so they want to go across Asia. And also they want to lock in resources because China has largely exhausted its own resources. So it's dependent on looting Africa and Asia, the wood, the oil, the iron ore, copper, all these resources they need for production. They suck those into China from those areas, and then they produce products, and they export that back out. That's one of the drivers of China's system. In capitalism, nobody builds buildings and freeways and trains that they have no customers to buy. How can you make a profit on that? That's not a viable business model. But this is not capitalism. The state has an interest in keeping people working. It doesn't matter whether it makes a profit. So that's why they keep them producing stuff that they can't sell, or they can only sell by dumping it on the world market, like steel. They flooded the world market with cheap steel. They sell it less than it costs to produce. They'd rather have people producing than them producing nothing, because they still have to support them anyway, or else they'd be rioting in the street. They would rather sell it at a super low price and dominate the market. You know, that's standard capitalist practice. Lose money in the beginning so you can control the market, and then you can raise the prices later. So, you know, they're just imitating the capitalists in that sense, you know? This is the point. They're uber nationalists, not like capitalist nationalists. Capitalists aren't really nationalists. They just go where the money is. But the Chinese are super national. Chinese Communist Party, I mean, that's why they find it rational to do things like this. I think this model is going to crash. It's crashing already, I think, in certain key ways. Although it has spectacular success, it's on a very weak foundation.
And it could go on for quite a while, it seems to me, because productivity in certain sectors is so great for an agriculture. Of course, China's ruining its land, but productivity is really increasing. Homes are being built. People are living. There's communication systems. They can sort of afford this enormous wasteful economy as long as you're creating sort of the basics of human life. And China's pollution, especially its carbon greenhouse gas emissions, we'll talk about that for next week. It seems to me, though, they're going to continue. They can't not continue, like the capitalists in the West can't not continue. International negotiations have failed and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. They just keep rising. The people who run things in the world are dead set on maintaining their systems, differing in lots of ways, but still enormously polluting. Why don't you take the last word?
I'll close by just saying something about the political crisis the Chinese communists face right now, and that is that the models of growth so far, they worked. So they worked up to a point, and they're sort of still working in some ways, that's true. But it's also, there are big cracks right now because of the trade war and because of other issues in China. Like right now, the political cracks are opening up. There are really, really important struggles going on, like right now in Shenzhen, with efforts to create a free trade union at a particular company called JASIC Technologies. What's interesting about this is that what happened was these workers tried to create a free trade union at this company because they said that the state trade union was useless for them, which it is, of course, because the state trade union is not a trade union. It's a means of controlling labor. So they tried to create a free trade union. And what happened was, which was most interesting, was a whole bunch of students came to their aid. And then it became a big campaign on universities. And one of the interesting groups of people that came was this woman, Yue Xin, who was the leader of the Me Too movement at Beijing University. She turned to organizing workers, and all these other students from universities all over the country came to aid these workers at this factory. So you've got a student worker alliance at this factory, and this has really freaked out the government. They arrested the students. They released some, but some of them, including this woman, are still in prisons. You just don't know what could be the spark that lights the next prairie fire, as some famous person once said. And I don't know what the spark is going to be in China, but it's not just the ecological and environmental crisis, which is very severe, but it is also the social political crisis, as Xi Jinping finds it necessary to crack down on the whole society, to spy on everybody, to take the Gaokao, that big high exam that people have to take to get into college now. Just a couple of weeks ago, the government declared that students have to declare their fealty to the Chinese Communist Party and prove it before they can take the test. And people are so outraged. And Xi Jinping is bringing more and more Maoism and Communist Party politics into the classroom. And people are saying, look, we need our kids to be competitive and educated. One parent said, you know, it's crazy. It's like teaching Darwin in the morning and teaching Christian fundamentalism in the afternoon. This is what it's come to. You know, there's all this politics in schools and so forth. So there's a lot of anger about that. People are diluted into consumerism, and yes, the prosperous middle class, and you know, the cities look nice and so forth, but it's all very fragile. So it's hard to say where this is going to go, but I don't see this going on very long, because I see the Communist Party running out of options here. And Xi Jinping in particular has got himself into a lot of trouble with the Communist Party, because he's been such a standout imperialist and a blowhard on the economy about, well, we're going to be made in China 2025, we're going to lead the whole world. And now they've alarmed the whole world. Now Chinese companies are really up against it everywhere in the world. So this is really, really a problem for him. I predict that his Belt and Road is going to be a big problem down in the next few years for China. And I predict that his 2025 fantasy of leading the world in high technology is a definite no-show. That's not going to happen. So I think that's going to be really, really hard for the Chinese Communist Party to come up with a successive model for that. So we'll see.
Richard, good talking to you today. And we'll talk soon about climate crisis, which is going to seize every country on Earth. The planet is in deep trouble. There's going to be a response. Chinese are part of the trouble. They may be part of the solution. We'll talk about that in the next interview. Richard Smith, thanks a lot.
Thanks very much, Bill. Talk to you next week.
Well, I said I really didn't think I had the urge to purchase, and in any case, my cash was running low. His eyes beamed out a warning and his smile got kind of stormy, and he said there's just one thing you ought to know. It's people like you that are letting down the country when our democratic freedoms are at stake. Cause if you don't buy, the wheels will start to falter, and after that it's on with a break. Then confidence will be destroyed and minions will be unemployed and anarchy will run from out its harmony. So tell me, sir, do you prefer to be a lousy saboteur or help to boost the national economy? Because production only rises and investments only boom when the demand stimulates the supply. Then everyone will prosper, so I hope it's very plain that it's your patriotic duty to buy.